Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, this is Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. We're back with another one. This one's with Janie Godley. She's fantastic. Do stick around. If you enjoy these podcasts, you can help us make more by going to www.gofasterstripe.com/badges and either buy a one-off badge for a pound or buy a monthly badge for a pound or more, or just make a donation of anything you want. You don't even have to have a badge in return. There'll be 100 podcasts by the end of this series. If you think they're worth one pence each, then you are a prick. Go and give us a pound, or give us more than that if you think they're worth more than that. But seriously, if everyone gave us £1, we could make 3 more series of this straight off the bat. So it's literally that simple. But if you can't afford to give us a pound, then please tell your friends about this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks very much for watching and listening. Goodbye. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's going to beg you for permission to come. It's Richard Herring. Oh, yeah, referencing something you at home will never know. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cooler kids have started calling it recently, Rahulastapa. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'll just have a little... There's some new people have arrived since last week. There's some... it's been... Oh, no, fuck this up. I'm knocking off the... It's all out of focus. Oh, what a disaster. I only use it hardly ever. It's on standby. No, it's fucked. I brought your camera, guys. Sorry. Hello, lovely to see you. Were you attracted down by the talk of these three gentlemen here? Is that what attracted you down? There's three young ladies have arrived. You were sitting over there and you've just moved across. But was it to get closer to... Look at him. He's never been this close to a woman in his life. He can't understand. What's your name?
Alice.
Alice, that's a very beautiful name. What do you do for a living? You're at home with kids. That is, well, that is a proper job, isn't it? It's harder than a proper job. Ah, I subverted your expectation. I'm at home with the kids a lot as well. It's a difficult job because they're fucking annoying, aren't they? And apparently when they can start moving around and stuff, it gets worse, right? And they can talk back at you. How old are your kids?
7, 5, and 2.
7? You don't look... You must have been 3 years old. It's kind of quite a sad story that... Terrible. It's kind of fun though, right?
Yeah.
Where's the father? He's at home. Oh no, he's down there. Who's looking after the kids? Fuck! We were so excited about seeing. He's quite nice looking. You're not going to go. He hasn't got a chance. He hasn't got a chance. Stop thinking. Don't even think about it. They come here because they like it. That's the. If you go on the Dirty Britcom Confessions, those three just write fantasy. I hope Richard Herring will say I'm awful and disgusted. He's got his hands in his lap. He's enjoying himself. So, look, we're going to crack straight on. We haven't got all of, as long as usual. So, will you please welcome my guest this week? She's much better than last week's guest. She is probably best known as Maris McKinnon from River City. That's why we're all here to see. We're all fans of River City here, right? The Scottish soap opera. Scotch soap opera, I should say. Will you please welcome Janie Godley, ladies and gentlemen? Janie Godley, good God. Good God, it's Janie Godley. Thank you.
Maris.
Janie Godley. Welcome.
Thank you, Maris McKinnon.
I watched it today. It's on YouTube.
I was in one episode.
It was. You were the main person that episode. No one else had any lines to learn that week when you were in.
My very first episode, and I had to kiss that main character guy.
Yeah.
And I was horrified because I didn't want to kiss him. So my daughter thought it'd be a great idea to get a picture of him and cut it into a mask and cut a hole and put her tongue through it and chase me round the house. You know, like proper acting. And it was too small. I don't kiss small men.
No.
No.
Oh.
It was, seriously, it was just like one step above a troll. So I'm like... It could have been in The Hobbit. I'm like, but no. And at the very end of that episode, there was like really eerie sound, and I cat went meow, and it was atmospheric. And my niece watched it, and I was expecting her to be so impressed, and she went, "Did you actually see the cat?" It's like fucking really disappointed. I never saw the cat. So yeah, my big entrance into TV, and kissed a small hobbit. There was a cat.
It was good. Good. Look, watch it on YouTube. You play a mystic clairvoyant.
Psychic clairvoyant.
Who turns out not to be everything that she seems.
She could have been.
But then she turns out she could be everything. I don't want to give any spoilers.
Yeah.
It's
it
like
was
they're
5 years ago, so, you know, you can catch up with it 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I had never watched River City, so when they gave me the part, I had to sit and go through all the characters and quickly get to grips with it, and then went, oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
And then just did the show and left, and then they've never had me back. I suspect that my amazing acting might have put them off.
You were good.
I think
you might have been too good for... I'm suspecting that most people in this audience... I haven't seen River City either. I'm not really sure what we're talking about.
I have to say, though, the set, River City is our Scottish soap opera. The set is down in... You should see the film set.
Yeah.
It is one of the best in Europe. It's huge. It literally is a whole big giant street. And I just kept walking about going, that really looks like a house. Annoying people. And they're like, you're a fucking idiot, you know? And I was like, is that a real house? They're like, no, it's... set, and I just couldn't stop doing that, so I suspect that's why I never get asked back. I was confused by the set.
They should have you back. You're the best thing in it, definitely, from what I've seen of River City, which is just you talking in River City about the characters in River City who I don't know. But it was quite a good episode to start with, because you give a lot of information about the people, don't you, in it?
So I did, and that was the big boo-boo at the end bit. It was just me doing this. If you missed it, this is what I do at the end. That's it.
That is. There's no point in
watching.
I know,
fucking impressive, eh? Hang on.
Yeah. You definitely need the cat there, because it's... And the light flickers.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of got all the clichés in there. It's good. You're now best known as a stand-up comedian, storyteller, podcaster, a periscope. I don't even know what that is, but you're in a submarine or something doing periscoping.
I like to periscope. I periscoped a big... protest outside District Nightclub the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, it's District Nightclub in Rupert Street. They refused two women. They said they were too fat and they were too black. So a whole big protest started out, and I was going to get the bus down to the flat. I thought, something's happening, periscope. And they had a whole big demonstration, and I got right embroiled in it.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant, because apparently this nightclub was being really fucking discriminatory and fat-shaming women and stuff. And it was brilliant, because they were having a proper... Because the English protest is very different from the Scots, because we use knives. So... I'm joking. So... They were all being very nice at the Sense Garden. You can't do that to people, yeah! All that, right? And then this beautiful, big, black woman jumps out the crowd and she was beautiful and shapely and big ass and big tits and she whipped off her coat and she went, come on, am I too much for you? I went, oh, this is fucking brilliant. You know, I had the camera and it was great. So I got a protest on Periscope on the way to the 88 bus down to Westminster and then I stopped at Downing Street, gave David Cameron the Vicky and carried on. It was a good night, all in all.
It's too far for me, Periscope. So Periscoping's your own TV channel on your phone, basically?
Yeah, it's basically like Skype, and it's a streaming video. And Ashley, my daughter and I, Ashley, we Periscoped the general election because there was nothing better than watching some of the Labour councillors in Glasgow losing their seat, practically political porn. I almost touched myself, it was that good. And seeing them lose their seats to a woman who's not even a politician, she maybe just ran an Avon catalogue but signed up. And she's like, all right, I'm now the councillor. It was great. We periscoped the general election, so it was really cool.
You don't take any shit, Jodie. No. That's what I like about you. So you and again, unlike a lot of comedians, you had quite a life before becoming a comedian.
Yeah, I don't know whose word that is. I don't want to touch yours because you've clearly got some dirty virus.
Well, I haven't been sick yet, so yeah. I might be all right. Grew up in Glasgow and was...
I had a life before I owned
There's a fantastic book you've written called A Handstands in the Dark.
Yeah.
Which is still available, isn't it?
It still sells. In fact, when I started using Periscope, the sales of the book went up. So there's a tip.
There you go.
Yeah. I know people all over the world were like, oh my God, you've written a book. I'm like, yeah, who knew Glaswegians could read? So... I owned a bar before I became a stand-up like Lee. My daughter was raised in a bar. We owned a pub. I was married last Sunday for... That was my wedding anniversary for 35 years. Don't cheer. You don't know. I was laughing. Like, yeah, what are you cheering? Do you know? No, 30, I don't wear rings and I don't have his name. And I've only got one child because I don't breed well in captivity, as you say. But we're still married, and we owned a pub for 15 years in one of the roughest, most depraved parts of Glasgow. I don't know, at 18, I thought, yay, this will be a cool career move. I was a kid, I didn't know. I was just a teenager. I can't imagine putting Ashley into that situation, but I thought that was okay.
Well, and he was from a big gangster family in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Though he was the ninth. There were six brothers, was there?
Seven brothers. His mum had a son, twin sons, a son. And then she died, I'm presuming, of boredom. I didn't know there were gangsters. I just thought, what a bunch of organised men. Nobody says, hi. We're the gangsters. Come on in. I just thought, oh, that's quite an interesting bunch of men in your family. And, it was weird. I think what's weird is the politics. I mean, you say gangster, people assume immediately they were drug dealers. They weren't. My father-in-law did not sell drugs. He was a robber and a murderer, so don't get that mixed up. Because I don't want you to think he's a dirty drug-dealing bastard. Yeah, because there is a difference morally, isn't there? So, I don't know if he murdered MD. I'm joking. I don't know. So, it's not like you're introduced to them like that. You kind of... It's like the Von Trapp family. You're like, oh, really? You all can sing and dance? No, it was a kind of slow realisation. But the politics he'd been in was such a bunch... of men. And it's funny because people say things like, oh, you know, you shouldn't work with this person, they're misogynist, or you shouldn't do that. I was like, I owned a pub in the East End of Glasgow, I married into a gangster family and I work in comedy, for fuck's sake, don't tell me how I should be dealing with misogyny, seriously. And it was really, the dynamics of that was weird, because my father-in-law was a typical big Glasgow man who had seven sons. And it was very Shakespearean at times, you know?
Yeah.
He would, you know, if I ever had an argument with my husband, he would say, come on up and speak to me. And I was like, okay. And then he said, you know, if you ever get fed up with him, I'm like, where is this going? You know, you could always come here. And I'm like, genuinely saying that when I'm finished fucking your creepy mental son, I'm going to come here and start sleeping with you? Do you think I've fell and banged my head en route to this house? And that was genuinely what he was doing. He was creepy. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to your mental son. That's fine. And it took me a wee while to realise, but it was that power struggle thing where, you know, he was quite... They passed women around each other, the other brothers as well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't... It sounds weird me saying this now and you thinking, well, what did you say about it? When you're in that and you don't really know what that is, and it's not until I left and then I look back and go, was that an occult? What the fuck was I thinking? Why did I not say something then? And that was that's the weirdest thing about it.
Yeah.
It's not until you leave it and you look back and go, what was that? And then you realise that it was bad and wrong and politically mental and socially stupid, and you think I should have said this or I should have did that, but I didn't. I was a teenager married into a mental family. So, and to make matters worse, my husband had autism and Asperger's. I never knew that's what he had. I thought he was just a Catholic. I should have known. His nickname was the Professor. But I didn't know.
But you did well. There was it's a great book because it's I mean there's a lot
Thank
of tragedy
you.
In there, but it's very yes. it's very and it's positive. I think it's, you're not even though awful things happen to you in your life, you don't come across as a victim. You're not no.
I think that it's hard to. He's getting to a point where I was sexually abused and raped and beaten up as a child, and then I married into a gangster family, and then my mother was murdered, and then my brother died of AIDS, and I haven't even killed a gypsy in a past life, and all of that all seems horrible and bad, but I actually had a happy childhood, which is weird. I know it's hard to explain, but I did. I was very much loved. My dad loved me, still alive, and he was always really kind to me and told me that I was bright and I was going to be a great artist and I was going to be a great writer, and I was nurtured and loved. So I think that the lesson we can take is no matter how much shit's happened to you, if your parents love and nurture you, there's a part of you will always be able to survive an awful lot. I think that was the only thing that I took out of that.
Yeah.
Everybody is stunned. I'm so sorry. You're all looking at me going, oh my God, shall we give her a hug? Don't, I'm fine. I grew up married into a gangster family and they got him killed for my birthday and all I wanted was a bracelet.
But yeah, it's true. He was right. You are an amazing writer. Because you write a blog as well.
Yeah.
But the book's beautifully written. But the blogs, I write blogs, and I know that you write blogs very...
I haven't written
very
as many
quickly.
Recently, but no. I have been writing. I did write for 10 years, one every day, then I got bored of it.
I've carried on. Well, I've got bored of it, but I carry on through the boredom. But you know, I think because you know you write. You know, I know that one writes a blog very quickly. It's not like writing a book. But when you go back and read your blogs, they are very considered and very poetic and very interesting. You know, and there was you wrote something maybe it was on Facebook about a young lad stepping in to stop a girl getting harassed by some guys, a nerdy guy stepping in.
Oh, on the tube two weeks ago. It was beautiful,
it was
wasn't
lovely.
It?
Yeah.
It was a beautiful thing, because normally everything I write is like death and destruction and murder and hatred. And this most beautiful thing happened. I was on the Glasgow Underground. It just goes in a circular wee tube and it's great. And I live near a private school called the Glasgow Academy. And the girls there, and my daughter went to a private school as well, and the reason I mention that is up until they're 18, they still have to wear a school uniform. And there is that weird dichotomy of an adult woman, because I was married at that age, but she's in a school uniform, and there was this girl sitting just across, and she was so beautiful. I didn't mention all the details in the book. She was mixed race, and she had these beautiful eyes, and you know when you just see a young teenage woman, and you're like, God, she looks so beautiful and bright, and she exuded confidence and she had big dimples, and I was looking at her going, oh wow, you look like you've got it together. And then these two wee Glasgow Neds with the shell suit and came on, and I thought, oh fuck, that's that ruined then. And as soon as they said, you couldn't help but look at her, she was just full of confidence and everything, and these wee Glasgow Neds were like, hey doll, your $8 at your school uniform for porn or something, they said, right? And she just looked at them and I thought, if they say one more thing, I'm going to punch them in the face. Because I can do that. I'm that age. I'm premenopausal. I've stopped smoking. You know, I could say. And I like a fight, so. And I'm like, fucking, I'm in. And just before I went to say something, there was a boy stood up. And you know that, you know how boys and girls at that age are mature differently? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, at 15, you probably still had stickers on your bike, and there was girls at 15, like, with a bra and going to a club, and you're still like, check my stickers on my bike, you know?
Long after 15, but yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do, yeah.
So this boy was like the same age as her, but you know when a teenage boy has grown too much too quick and he just looks like an Alsatian that hasn't quite grown into his legs yet? He was all legs and arms, God bless, and he had the exact same school uniform and he had that Andy Murray hair that will never be fixed, you know? You know what I'm saying? Andy's hair's just like, it's fucked, we can do nothing with it. That is what it is, right? He had that hair. And he had braces on his teeth. God, and he had spots all the way up round the side here where they get the acne. And he was just the most awkward boy in the world. And he, immediately, when these boys started, I was just about to step in, and this big, gawky, lanky boy leaned over, and he went, guys, don't be disrespectful to women. Who raised you to speak like that to women? And all the women in the tube went, wow, you knock it out. Yeah. And this young boy, obviously, took him all his courage to do this, and then he looked at the girl, and the girl smiled at him, and I swear to God, the tsunami of hormones almost... Everybody, adults in the tube like you, all we all went, wow, you know? And she smiled and she had these big dimples and they shook hands, but she held on to his hand. He went pink right up until... And it was just this beautiful moment of... He's obviously always wanted to speak to her and here he got to be her fucking gladiator, you know? And they chatted. Everybody in the tube was like this. The two Neds couldn't speak. They're like... And then the boy got off the same stop as me and we walked to Buchanan Street and then we went to Glasgow Central. And he was the whole step. And you know, all the way to Glasgow Central, he smiled the whole way. And I'm thinking, oh, God love you. And he was texting his friends, obviously going, finally spoke to Triona, whatever her name was. And it was a lovely blog to write because it was filled such hope. And we all remember that teenage moment, you know, and oh God, it was so lovely. It is nice.
Lovely, but it's also the fact you spotted it and observed it, then wrote about it as well. Mm. You know, a lot of people would see that and let it go, but you just did it very
maybe I shouldn't always do that because, as you know, the Tim and Freya debacle.
Yeah,
I should have shut my fucking mouth sometimes. You don't know, but I was on a train from Glasgow to London, and a couple started arguing, and I started tweeting their conversation. And I started taking pictures of them. My daughter quickly phoned me and went, get the pictures down, it's illegal. I was like, okay. And I thought, why is she saying that? But I didn't know that the hashtag Tim and Freya thing had taken off and it went viral while I was on the train because I wasn't looking at my tweets. I was just going, he said, she said, he said, she said, he tunnel. He said, she said, he said, she said. And then it wasn't until I got off the train that I realised that it had gone completely viral round the world and thousands and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people had been tuning in. And Ashley Colby, when I got to King's Cross or Euston, whatever it was, she went, I hope you're fucking pleased with yourself. You've just exposed two people's life. And it made me think about, well, should we? And the press contacted me and said, it was the Daily Mail contacted me and said, do you think that what you did was morally right? I went, you hacked a dead kid's phone, get fucked. Or News of the World, whoever it was, you know, get fucked. You take upshots of Jordan's skirt, you take pictures of Suri Cruz and talk about her beautiful legs, go away. So they never spoke to me again. So, but yeah, I shouldn't have did that.
No, but you kind of, I think with this, that's the thing with the internet ages, you're sort of living and learning as you go, but it was very entertaining as well. So did it become, has it become like not a play exactly?
Yeah,
Ashley
took took the transcript of all the words and she made it into a play,
right.
And we put it on for one day at the Edinburgh Festival and we cast it and we put it together and she did the music, which was Rachmaninoff's music, which was Brief Encounter. Oh, and yes. She did it as a thing to ask if anybody recognised what the music was. And only one person got it, you know, Mike McShane, the actor. Yeah. He was in, he went, "It was Brief Encounter!" Oh, yay. But yeah, we did. We put it on as a play, so it worked out quite well in the end. But I did realise that other people were using it as a play. In New York, a lot of theatre groups take it without my fucking permission. But then again, I stole it off two people I saw on the train, so.
Yeah. It's hard to argue. My wife, who's a big fan of yours, was saying the thing she liked in your show was, well, you're talking about Twitter, because we're talking about social media, but you're talking about Twitter and how, the trolls on Twitter, mm-hmm. but you're talking about Caroline Credo Perez and, mm-hmm. and getting her getting all her media mates in to help yeah. her when that happened to her, but that doesn't happen to you.
No, I think it's not just me, it's just there's a two-tier... One of the things I hate, and I don't know if you guys hate this, but it's one of my big bugbears of society, is there's a law for one and a law for other. However that affects any part of your life irritates me. It's like if you can walk up to a shop and they'll say, oh, it's free sugar, and then you walk up and go, no, they have to chat. That would annoy me. A law for one and a law for another has always irked me. And that is the same as Twitter. If you are a complete... ordinary person who lives a normal life in a council house and your boyfriend is attacking you and then he writes on Facebook he's coming to kill you and then he posts things about Facebook that you're going to die. If you go to the police just say, well, get off Facebook. If you're famous, they'll come. I mean, the example is Tom Daley at the height of the Olympics. He failed to get a gold and to be quite honest, he should have got it because I bought into the hype. I was annoyed as well, but not annoyed to tweet him. And some guy tweeted, "You let your dead father down, you dick." Now, it's a horrible, not nice thing to say. It's not an arrestable offence. Being a horrible bastard isn't an arrestable offence. The police kicked that tweeter's door in at 6 a.m. The woman who was being attacked and on Facebook get nothing. I get death threats on Twitter the same year as that Tom Daley thing, and it was Rangers... supporters in Glasgow. We have sectarianism, Catholics and Protestants. I'm a Protestant who married a Catholic because we like our weddings to have a theme. The theme was hatred. And I wrote a thing about Prince William's wedding, saying a Union Jack hanging out a Glaswegian's flat doesn't mean they're celebrating the wedding. They're probably a Ranger supporter with an ugly dug. Hundreds of threats, rape. They were going to reap me, to be honest, because not a lot of them could spell. So that was annoying. So I got the police in, and the police basically just told me not to be cheeky on Twitter. Now, I was getting death threats. So I hate that the... And it's the same as recently. There's a Celtic super fan, this wee guy called Jay, and he's got Down syndrome, and a guy made a nasty remark about, a teenage boy made a nasty remark about a football player having Down syndrome, the same as that wee boy. I don't even know what it was. He has been arrested. Katie Hopkins says the kid that had half a brain shouldn't have been born, it should have been killed, and we should be shooting refugees in the beach. She doesn't get arrested. I'm not saying we should arrest Katie Hopkins. I'm saying we should either arrest everybody or arrest nobody. Don't make it a law for one and a law for the other. Do you agree? Yeah. Choose this law. That's what annoys me.
Yeah.
No, either let everybody say everything they want or nothing, you know?
I agree. And I think you should let everyone say what they want.
Yeah. I agree too.
The more it goes on, the more, you know, because you can get into little, you know, well, we shouldn't say this.
No.
But then the minute you start doing that, then that opens up a fissure and then it's everything. And that's what
I think
happens.
Everything should be, unless it's a direct death threat and say, we're coming to fucking kill you. We hope you die. I got it this morning. A woman said to me today, I was discussing the refugees coming from Syria to Glasgow and I support that. And she says, well, you know, it'll not be that if a refugee rapes your daughter. And I said, oh, actually, we've got our own rapists in Glasgow. And she was so annoyed. And I'm actually telling the truth.
Well, you do. Life and incident seems to attract itself to you. And
yes, I do tend to be the epicentre of disaster, Richard. Yeah. Yes.
So, like, in Edinburgh this year, you're nearly the flat down the road from you as...
No, two happened? Doors down, a man decided that through his own, God love him, mental illness, he was going to store gas canisters and blow the whole block of flats up. But he killed himself, a poor man, and he set fire to the block of flats that we were staying in. And Ashley's like, yep, you escaped death again, Jenny. And there is a weird thing that and you know the plastics factory, the stock line plastics that blew up in Glasgow?
Yeah.
I was there as well.
Right.
Yep, of course I was. I was the first person to get pictures because I had a camera with me. It was before camera phones. And I took pictures of it and I'm like, what am I doing? And yeah, and of course, the most recent was the bin lorry disaster last year. I was on the spot just as everything went past and the carnage was on the street. And of course, yes, I was standing right on the street. And I'm thinking, what is this? What's happening? And of course, you know, being a kid or the stuff that happened to me, and I'm like, maybe I'm just meant to live a wee bit more. Maybe that's the lesson I'm being told. Just keep living a wee bit more, Jenny. But it was weird because the bin lorry disaster was, I don't know what the name for it is, but I just arrived on the scene when the... If you imagine, if you come to a crossroads in a really busy street in Glasgow and there is carnage, and I won't describe what I saw, and there was an awful lot there, but there is no vehicles. And your brain's gone, what did this? Because if you see people on the street and baggage on the street and shopping, you look for the two cars that have... You know what I'm saying? But there was nothing. And I couldn't make sense of why this had happened. And then the policemen panicked and we calmed each other down. And then I managed to stop the traffic coming up Queen Street because it was Christmas and the fairground was there. And I went down Queen Street and I stopped people from coming up. Not just me, lots of other people did. You know, it wasn't just me. And we were saying, don't go up, because there was an awful lot of mess. And I came home and my husband, as I told you, he's got autism and Asperger's, and I had been out to get Ashley a Christmas present because I'd not got her Christmas. And I went on the news and I was on the radio because I tweeted it and immediately all the radio... I didn't say there's a horrible... I just said avoid Georgia Square, there's been some sort of road accident. And when I got home, my husband said, so did you get Ashley a Christmas present? I'd been out for 3 hours, didn't even know where I'd been. I was blank. I was speaking to Channel 4 and I was white and I was eating a cake in the street and I've lost 2 hours of my life. I went, well, I was in the middle of a horrible accident. He went, yeah, but you were out for hours. And Ashley had to say, Mum, I'll deal with this. You mental, shut up! She went, you okay? And that's what autism is. And then he went, I'm sorry. That's fine. But you could have got her sucked. Yeah.
Well, you always manage to find the funny side of, you know,
yeah,
the worst things that can happen, which I think you have to.
A good thing came out of that.
Right.
Because I couldn't sleep after the... You see, the thing is I've survived a lot of things in my life and I never really was affected by it terribly. I was always okay. I managed to survive everything okay. But for some reason, that really floored me and I couldn't sleep and I lost my memory for about 2 days. I was forgetting things like forgetting where I put my cup, forgetting where I put my phone, forgot names, couldn't form sentences. And even to this day when I discuss it, I develop a bit of a stutter and I can't get the word out. So it was the one thing that affected me. And then they sent me to therapy, but that didn't work because she was crazy. And the police offered me 15 sessions and they get paid for it. It's a company, they get paid for all your sessions of therapy. I went for one. She's crack-a-lacking mental. I'm not going back. She did drawings on a whiteboard and none of them were good. And I was like, I'm fine. And I didn't really cope well. And it was my daughter, Ashley, says the reason is everything in your life has happened to you. This happened to other people and you can control it. So I mean, that makes sense. So the good thing is I stayed up all night and then I realised I was good at painting. So I started painting watercolours and I sell them on Twitter for the food bank. So I've made about $2,000 for the food banks through having sleeplessness through watching a horrible disaster. So that's a good thing, isn't it? No, yeah.
Dear. Well,
I'm not sad. I'm not sad. Everything's fine. Look at my landscape. La, la, la.
Your stand-up is amazing and very funny. And so people, and this kind of you know, this. I mean, you're being very funny tonight, but it's we're kind of going on the dark side.
I can
of
hear
things.
People clench.
Yeah, but you work with your daughter a lot, which is good. So that's kind of a weird. I mean, it shouldn't be weird. It's sort of weird that it's weird. It's weird that people think, oh, a parent liking their daughter and a daughter liking their parent enough to work together. That's weird. And they go, oh, no, hold on. It's weird that most parents and children don't feel that. But you do work with Ashley a lot. You do a podcast together and you've done shows together. And she's been doing stand-up since she was 13.
She did stand-up at 11.
11, yeah.
And then she stopped when she was 13. And she didn't like it much. And then she worked with me and she used to help produce the shows and she came to Edinburgh and organised the show and did it, and she's always been around comedy all her life. And then about a year and a half ago she went, ah, fuck it, I'm going to go back on stage, and I went, I dare you. And she did, and turns out she's quite good, and that's annoyed me. And we got on great, and we did a TV interview during the festival, and the guy kept trying to make us fight. He's like, you must hate each other, eh? We're like, no. He's like, I bet you don't really like each other. And I went, do you have kids? He went, aye, I've got three. And immediately at the same time, my daughter went, I bet they don't like you because you don't like your kids. And they went, no, I do like them. I went, no, you clearly don't, because you're trying to cause an argument between us. And we're not, we're fine. And the minute you do that, she becomes hyper-protective of me.
Yeah.
And she will fucking attack you. So, I mean, she might be privately educated and quite nice, but if you've mess me or her dad around, she will take a ball hammer to you, you know? She's very protective. And we do like each other. She is my daughter. I love her. I think she's great fun.
Yeah.
And it's good company, you know? She's great. And when my husband's irritating me, she steps in and goes, why are you arguing with somebody who's got autism? And I'm like, because he's annoyed me. Let it go. I'm trying to get dinner made. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she kind of parents us as well, which is probably wrong, but it's my life.
have you tried to do this? Have you tried to do your family as a sitcom, or have you ever pitched this as a sitcom?
Well, we did in America. We did it in LA. We pitched it, but Ashley did it more successfully. She wrote a pilot called Conundrums My Dad Says, because you know she's a William Shatner fan, and it was a homage. And William Shatner tweets her all the time, so she's over the moon. And that's why she doesn't have a boyfriend. So she wrote a radio pilot called Conundrums My Dad Says, and it was about a guy that lives with his father who's got autism.
Right.
And it was really good, and it got aired on BBC Radio Scotland, and they're looking at it to make a series, hopefully.
Cool.
So she's done that much more successfully than me, because she went to university and got a degree in screenplay writing. I never got that opportunity. I had to go to school, leave school at 15, go to work, because I didn't have the charmed life that she has. Joking, she's great.
But I think it's like we had Limmy on the last series, who's also from Glasgow.
Yeah.
But again, I think, you know, there's something about not coming through the traditional route of writers, and especially through university, which of course I did as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you come through a certain way and you write in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then when you see someone, you know, I think who's lived a life in a different kind of life than most people, then A, you've got something interesting to write about, but also the way both of you write, I think, is just beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. But she's had, you know, you've got to remember, my daughter witnessed her parents getting dragged away because they found a lot of guns in her house. She watched us being arrested for guns. But luckily, we always had the lawyer's number inside a teddy bear. Everybody teaches a kid that, right? And I used to say when she was small, that's Mr. Bovey. If anything ever happens to Mum and Dad, you take Mr. Bovey inside his pocket. It's a phone number, and it's for Mr. Bovey. So the day it happened, the police came, they found all the guns, they arrested us. And I said to Ashley, what do you want? She went, I want my teddy bear. I was like, Mr. Bovey, gave her it. She left with a social worker, took the number out, went to a call box, phoned the lawyer. So sometimes educating your children is very important. She was seven.
And I suppose, like, well, you've dealt with these people.
Just to say the guns weren't mine.
Yeah. Oh, well, they weren't yours.
Okay. That's it.
Okay. Having dealt with the people in these pubs, you've obviously makes dealing with hecklers quite easy.
Mm.
So there's a lot of you on YouTube dealing with tricky audiences. I saw some stuff today, but they can't be tricky compared to.
No, I don't know. The trickiest was when we had Jerry Sadowitz in the pub with that gangster. We had a gangster in Glasgow called Arthur Thompson, who was really feared, but I didn't find him frightening. But anyhow, Thompson was in the pub in 1984. My brother, Jim, who died, he was a drug addict, AIDS and stuff. He was crazy, but he was brilliant fun. And he brought a guy called Jerry Sadowitz into the pub, and he went, it's my mate Jerry. Does a bit of card trick and music and magic. And he went, I just do magic and comedy. And I was like, right. He said, so why don't you put them on? I went, because we don't have that kind of pub that does that. He went, just do it. I went, okay. So anyhow, we put Sadowitz on, gave him his first ever gig, and he did the trick with the watch and the apple.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if any of you know, but he says, give me your watch, and then he banged it with a hammer. Arthur Thompson's watch. Whole pub, people just left. People just left the pub. I'm just now standing behind the bar, and springs hit me in the eye. And I'm going, oh my fucking God, he's just barred Arthur Thompson's watch with a hammer. Yay! Bang, bang, bang with a hammer. And then he gave Arthur Thompson an apple and then gave him a knife. Why would you not? I'm like, okay, this is going to end two ways. And he opened up the apple and there was his watch. Hurrah! But for that brief 5 moments, I thought, he's got to stab that big man. That weird Jewish guy with the funny hat's going to get a knife in his face. So that's not normally a Sunday. So, worked out. I think that's when I started ever. That was the first time I got heartburn. Acid. What's that acidy refluxy thing? That was that day.
And you've gigged in a high security prison?
Mm-hmm.
How did that go?
Great. Did Berlini, did a few high security prisons. It's funny because you get all the security come round the walls and they all stand there. First time I did it, I took my husband with me. Normally he doesn't go anywhere with me, he doesn't like anything. And he sat in the front row and I was on stage and this guy turned to my husband and went, "What are you in for, mate?" And he's like, "No, I'm with the comedians." He's like, "No, you're not. What are you in for?" And I was like, "Could you two, you stop heckling? I'm trying to do a gig." My husband's like, "He thinks I'm in here." And I'm not. I was like, "Seriously?" And that went on for ages. And then just when I was about to speak, at least 9 people went, "Janie, am I still barred for your pub?" I was like, just why? I don't own the pub anymore. You know? Mind that time we went and stole Hunters or what's it? And that was weird.
Yeah.
I knew most of them. That was the weird thing. Going, go tell my ma. Said, no, I'm not telling your ma anything. Shut up. So none of them found it funny because it was just information to them. That's the horrible thing about being a comedian and going back to the East End of Glasgow to do comedy. They don't find it funny. They're like, yup. When I say things like, "Oh, I come from a place where an OXO cube's a starter," you laugh, they go, "Yeah." Tough crowd.
And you were a fan of the Bay City Rollers, like my sister was a big fan of the Bay City Rollers.
Yeah, I was, and yeah. I met them recently, but I'm a bigger fan of Donny Osmond.
Are
you? Haven't you met?
You haven't met him?
No, my pal Monica met him and I was so annoyed. Ashley wrote to his website a few times to get him to say hello, but she says he charges money for words, so she says he can go fuck himself. So I'm a big Donny fan. One day we'll meet and we'll fall in love and then I'll go to Utah and I'll get new teeth and then we'll be happy. I've had this dream since I was 14. Don't take it off me. I'll get there and like a crater will fall because you know something bad will happen.
What's Donny Osmond doing these days? Is he still
very married to that woman who irritates me. He's got like 19 children or something.
Has he?
Yeah. No, I don't fancy him now. He doesn't look like he could go it, so. It looks like he'd wash his hands first. It's too clean for me, you know.
It's a weird life for those. The Bay City Rollers are reformed.
Yeah, they look quite dirty. They do it, yeah.
Yeah.
They take you in a skip, the 5 of them. Yeah.
It must be a very weird life for the Bay City Rollers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of weird stuff in the Bay City Rollers anyway. But Les McKeown, who was the dreamboat, but my sister still goes insane.
I met him recently. I mean, but there's just a story and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, they made it big in America when nobody could break that. Nobody did in America what the Bay City Rollers did. And of course, like every band back then, they get pumped for every penny they ever made. And that must be awful, you know what I mean? But they were huge. I liked them. It was that whole, I was like 14, 15 when they were huge and all of the schoolgirls all loved them and everybody. And then I did a gig about 3 weeks more than that before the festival. And I was on with the Bay City Rollers. And I remember I was just sitting backstage chatting to them, you know, the whole time I'm going, guy for the Bayside Rollers. In my head the whole time going, talk to the guy for the Bayside Rollers. And it's weird when there's somebody you fancy and then you meet them, like Roland Gift, who is a good friend of mine now. Oh my God. In the 80s, I had the dirtiest, violent sexual dreams about Roland Gift. I mean, I cannot tell you where that went. And then he came to see me and he became a fan and we sat chatting and Ashley walked in. She went, is that not that guy you fancied you used to talk that dirty about? I was like... And that is still when I talk to him and I still look up and I make eye contact and I go, yeah...
I have the same thing with Janet Ellis, who I used to be crazy about, but now I'm friends with.
Is she the Blue Peter?
Yeah, Blue Peter and Jigsaw.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you used to think about?
I did think about
her.
I did a lot, and you know.
Yeah, maybe Roland Gift as well.
I still would, you know, but she's even though I'm married and she's married.
Yeah,
if she wanted
I'd still
to,
bang Roland Gift in a minute. Yeah. Please don't let him have. Don't tell him.
This might be the moment he might listen to this and then.
No,
go,
his wife's my friend. Okay.
If she's that good a friend.
Yeah, she would share.
She would. She's a very lucky woman to have him. So I want to ask you this emergency question because I'm really interested to see. I bet it's not going to lead anywhere. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Yes!
Yes, thank God.
You know my ghost story.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I don't know if I've seen a ghost, but I was in the... You played that room as well. In the Edinburgh Festival, there's a venue called The Underbelly down on the Cowgate. Does anybody know it? Yeah. Well, it's like a creepy old building. It's where people died. I don't care what anybody said. Folk died there. And I think they kept the dead bodies there during the plague or whatever. But it's a creepy, creepy, creepy old venue. And it's... The stage, there was a black curtain, and then the wall behind that black curtain there was like that. That literally was no backstage. And I was doing this play that I wrote called The Point of Yes. Excuse me. And it was about when drugs came to the East End of Glasgow, and I played the two characters, because it was never going to be a happy musical, was it? So I played the two characters. Cut a long story short, every now and then I had to stand behind that curtain and then come out. The audience are there, like, you're there, go behind that black curtain, stand, wait for the lights to change, come out. And one day I stood behind the curtain, just an ordinary day, I've been doing this play every single day, there was nothing different about this day. There was this, what was that shit that used to run down the walls? It was
God,
like rust or something, wasn't it? It was horrible. And I stood behind the curtain, and the curtain was against my face, just so close, and my head's against the wall. That's how narrow it was. And I was waiting for the cue, and then I just... Not thinking about it, wasn't saying to myself, oh, this is creepy. I was just going, right, what's the next scene? Is this the scene where it's eating you? And then I just felt something really close to my face. And I thought, I am not fucking turning my head. Because if I turn my head and I see a disembodied face, I'm going to scream. And I don't believe in ghosts, so this is a whole load of shit. But I could feel something getting... And then I could feel my face being touched. And I'm like, please hurry up with the lights. And then I heard this... Just this voice right beside me, and I thought, okay, I've now got schizophrenia, that's great. What a time for that to kick in. This thing was there. There was something there. I literally just whipped to it and went on. I rabbled through the next scene. I couldn't. And the whole time I was doing the scene, I knew I had to go fucking back there. And I'm like, I want to go back there. I was like, yes, this is an interesting play. How great. And then I had to go back. And the next scene, I didn't go behind that curtain. I just stood against the wall. And the techie and my director's gone. And I wanted to say, there's a thing behind the curtain! But I couldn't because it was a paying audience. So... It was creepy, Richard. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was my heightened sense or my imagination, but something went, Jane.
I mean, it's a very spooky place. It's just like lots of... It's old storage rooms, isn't it?
And
it is full of damp and really narrow staircase. I mean, the fear of that place is if anything happened in that place, any fire or...
Oh, you're not dead.
There's no way out.
No, there's bars in the windows in case you thought, oh, I'll jump out of the window. Nah, you're burning here. That's how that's gone. Oh, you're going down that tiny...
It literally has the worst disabled access of any venue I've ever
And I don't know how the fire people okay that. Ed and Charlie must take them behind that upside-down cow and blow them off themselves. Literally, there is no way that I should get a fire certificate. Like.
So what is worse, putting your penis in a dead animal's mouth or in a living animal's mouth? Which is the worst of those two things?
Well...
As an, I think you're an arbiter of morality and know the answer to that.
I have known drug addicts who have injected into their eye that haven't stuck their cock into a dead animal's mouth. So the morals are... the best thing... Can I just tell you very quickly?
Yeah.
I told my dad, did you know that David Cameron put his penis in a dead pig's mouth? And my dad's old and he's got dementia, and he turned to the carer and said, what are you making that David Cameron putting his cock in a dead kid? And I never corrected him. I just let that hang. And Glaswegians being Glaswegians went, yeah, I know. They just expected that's what he did. Well, yeah, I would put my genitals in a live pig's mouth.
Would you, yeah?
Yeah, why fucking not? What's the worst that can happen to me? Really? Like, his arse would explode or something? No, don't care.
Okay.
Don't care. I think the fact that David Cameron, and by the way, he did it, there's pictures, that's why he's not denying it.
Well, it may be the case. Whoever's got those pictures has a lot of power.
Yeah.
but you know, you can't deny it. He's in an impossible situation, because if he denies it, then he still looks bad.
I think so, the reason he did it, and I think there is a lot of those, you saw these pictures of these people at Oxbridge, as they call it, or whatever, and during the 80s they had all these shenanigans and people getting carried about in boxes and folks sticking their cocks and pigs and people dressing up. The reason that happened is basically that they're really rich and their parents don't like them, because see, if their parents liked them, they'd have went home at the weekend, but their parents didn't like them, and that's how you end up fucking a pig. My dad loved me, never stuck my fanny near a pig.
It could be. I think it's... He was, you know, he knew he wanted to be a politician at the time. I just can't see that he would, you know, do it and allow it to be photographed.
Yeah, maybe he was full of coke. Because that can make you dish up.
The caffeine in coke can really...
Oh, yeah,
really,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, can really... do. here's a new emergency question I'll ask you. Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were. Have I changed or have they? That's not the question. That's just a thought. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent in the past, just thought I'd change the mood a little bit. What time would you go to, and what food would you want to taste and compare? You can take back the food you've got now. It can be the same food, or it can be like a similar food.
Mm.
So it can be like, let's see if wagon wheels are the same as they were 20 years ago.
Oh, right.
Or it can be like, let's go back to medieval times and see whatever you like, Jenny. I'm not giving the rules.
I would like to go back to the 70s and swap or taste again. And I think it was good at the time, people still hate it, was a Vesta curry that was dried in a box.
Yeah, those...
Took you about 7 hours to boil it. It was forever. It was reconstituted dried meat with raisins. And then you boiled it for about 5 hours, and it was convenience food. And forever. And I think that would stand up to the test of time to a curry that you could buy off a van. Because you get the wee vans that sell curries.
Yeah.
I think it would, because to me, for the first time ever tasting a dried Vesta curry was like magical. I'm Glaswegian. The diet was just like vegetables.
We had those.
That's
in
it.
I would generally like. There was a program called, I think it was called Back in Time for Dinner. Did you see this program? And they went through the decades with people.
Was it Giles and Sue?
No, it's an ordinary family, and they took them through each decade. And then they had the food of that decade.
Yeah.
And they got to Vesta curries. And I completely forgot about it. I love this one that was like a noodle thing, where you put the noodle in boiling oil and it went and then turned
and
into
that's
this.
That's right.
Oh, God.
It was like eating fireworks.
Yeah. And I used to love that. And I'd love to have another go at that.
Yeah.
You youngsters wouldn't believe what we ate in the 70s. And it genuinely was. This is the height of unbelievable.
It was the height of
chic. It was a sweet and sour one, wasn't it? Sweet and sour pork, I think, which was amazing as well.
I remember eating pineapple and cheese together for the first time and a stick on. But the thing
that was in 2012 in Glasgow, though, to be fair.
The thing is, people always assume that, you know, working class diets were terrible, but in fact, weirdly, the food we ate back in the 60s and 70s is what middle class people eat now. Because when I was a kid and we were poor, I mean, we were really poor as kids, we ate stuff like a tiny bit of meat and then it'd be butter, beans and cabbage and potatoes and carrots, because they would fill up your plate with beans and vegetables. And it's a myth that Glaswegians never eat vegetables and fruit. That's because that was all we got. They were cheap. And you would get big plates of beetroot and potatoes and butter beans and cabbage and carrots and tiny bit of meat. Nowadays, that's what everybody eats. And when I look back, that's what we were raised on. And actually, a poverty diet was quite good for us, you know. We never got things like McDonald's or fish and chips because they were really expensive. We got, like, really boiled, mind you, my mum did fucking boil them until there was no flavour whatsoever in them, you know. Just slabbery food.
Yeah.
You could have fed it to a baby, but it was tasty at the time.
And you've done Edinburgh pretty much every year since 2002?
Yeah.
And you did the Free Fringe this year, which a lot of people did.
Loved the Free Fringe. It was a really good experience because it wasn't about the money I was giving away. It wasn't about the money I wasn't making or the money that... It was the money I wasn't giving away at a venue, because when we do the festival in the big venues, you know, it's not about the money you make. You're my accountant. I got a new accountant. He went, holy fuck, why did you give this people this much money? I was like, I know, that won't happen again. And I always made money at the festival because I'm in Scotland and I've got a bit of a following. But this year I decided to do the Free Festival, as did Ashley. And we contacted all the poverty groups and all the food banks, and we contacted everybody we could and said, come and see the show for free. You don't have to put money in the bucket. It's absolutely free. Don't have to give us money. And in fact, if you're skint, take money out the bucket. And it worked. People came and people asked for money out the bucket, and I was quite happy to give them it. Folk are like, can I get a fiver to get a beer and a bus home? I'm like, sure, knock yourself out. And I made more money this year than I had made in the past 7. Go figure. Socialism works. And we gave all the change to the homeless.
Yeah.
And I told the audience, if you put anything silver or bronze in the bucket, it goes straight to the homeless. I'd rather you didn't give me it, give it to the homeless yourself. But if you want me to be a conduit, I'll do it. But what was lovely was, is all the homeless guys got to know. And then they would come round and they didn't know which door I was coming out, but they found me. And I love that entrepreneurial ship. They're like, hi, Janie. Doug Barkin, yay. There you go. They got all the change. So we gave money away as well, so it was cool.
And do you tour your shows around the UK? Or
No, not really. I do a couple of them in Scotland, and I just like to travel around doing bits of stand-up. Yeah. I've not got a high enough profile to be able to tour a show because they don't have a white working-class Scottish woman on TV. Can you name a white working-class Scottish woman on TV doing comedy? There's your answer. There isn't one. No. People are like, no, there isn't. There isn't one. They don't have white, working class, Scottish, older woman, or just woman on TV.
I tell you what, you'd be great on Would I Like You, because your stories are just... how would they know?
Yeah.
There's enough stuff in there. I mean, you could do the whole, you know, next 10 series of Would I Like You and still not run out of true stories.
I think they're just frightened because they always think that I'll swear on TV, but I don't, and I don't swear on live radio. I'm on Just a Minute tomorrow. My episode, and I've never swore on TV or swore on radio. In fact, I'm the only person to get an apology from Ofcom because they assumed I did swear. I did a TV show called Kings of Comedy in 2004, and there was another woman in the show, and the word cunt was said, and the Channel 4 didn't even look at the tapes when they got the apology. They just assumed it was me. And they issued, we're sorry, Jeannie Godley said the C word. And it wasn't me, it was Ava. And she's completely tall and black, completely different than me. But they assumed it was me because I'm Scottish. And then Ofcom had to issue an apology to me. So I'm the only person who's got an apology from Ofcom. And then I called them a cunt.
But you do write that about that quite a lot, that people expect you, you know, people apologise that you're going to swear when they haven't done that with any of the men on.
That really upsets me. I did a gig for the run-up to the independence. And yes, I was for independence, if you're wondering. And not because I hate England, because I just think that we should be independent. I don't think it's anything bad to say. And we... This woman said, would you come and do this gig for Women for Independence? It's a feminist group. And I was like, yeah, yeah. So she had, like, Christopher Brookmeyer, great authors, people on. And then she got me on. She went, next up is Jeannie Godley, just so you know, she might swear. She hadn't apologised for the men. This was a feminist group. I fucking ripped her to bits on stage. I come on and went, well, fuck's sake, I'm glad she apologised for me in advance. Did you? And every single man had swore.
Yeah.
She never apologised before or after, but she apologised for me. I literally just fucking ripped her to bits. I was so upset because you study feminism. That's your subject at university. And you apologise for a woman coming on stage. Go fuck yourself. So annoyed. I'm so annoyed.
I don't think you're someone we want to cross. I think that is what I've learned from...
You see, that's the thing, is, and I'm not that angry or violent. Yeah. I just think it's right to be able to stand up for what you believe in. And yeah. Sometimes people always have this thing, I always believe in this, and I see this on Twitter. Yeah, but they're the very people that will go and do a gig in Bahrain. Well, don't spout your politics if you can't back it up with real action. If you're going to say you're this or you're that, don't take people's money if that's who you really are, you know? Whereas I would actually do without the money and stick by the principle. And my daughter's like, can you not just one shut up? And I'm like, no, I won't. Because that's what you should be. You should stick up for your principles and you should back it up. You can't just say one thing and do another. It's that law for one and law for another that really annoys me. So maybe I do come across as quite offensive and violent, but I'd be the first person to stick up for you if you were in a... MD fucked you about Richard, I'd have them.
Good, yeah.
But in a nice way, I'd hit them with some poetry. Then stab them. I wouldn't. I've never stabbed anybody in my life. Actually, I have. It was an accident.
Okay.
A drug addict came into the bar and he had a knife, and Ashley was about two, and it was a Monday. Who robs a pub on a Monday? The poor guy was desperate and he said, give me the money at the till. I went, mate, it's a fucking Monday. We bank on a Monday morning. You mad? I've got about 15 quid. And I had, you know, those big, big long knives you use to slice open the cans of pop, and it's all that hard plastic. It goes, shh, shh, shh. I had that knife under the counter and I just pulled the knife out and went, don't threaten me. But when I did that, I went, ding, and stabbed him. But because he was a drug addict, he bled profusely. So blood was everywhere, and Ashley was two. I was like in the kitchen, and then they ran out and the police caught him and the police brought him into the pub, and he's looking at me saying, dare I say she stabbed me? And I wouldn't stick him in. I went, it was an accident. He went, it was an accident. And we both says it was an accident. Police let him go. But 5 years later, he came back to the pub and he got straight, and he came back to say that that was the day he realised that he had to go straight. He was threatening a woman with a child and got stabbed. So maybe it's time to give this up. And he got straight and he came back to thank me for stabbing him. So there.
Well, I will take care not to offend you, ladies and gentlemen. Give a massive round of applause to Jeannie Godley. Thank you very much. Fantastic stuff. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rich Taring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Taring, and my guest, Jeannie Godley. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for all their kindness, and to everyone at GoFasterStrike.com as well. They are all quite good. The producer is Dave Cribb. It's a Go Faster Stripe Fuzz and Sky Potato co-production. We get on very well together. Thank you for listening. Tell the world about this, please. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Check out richardtaring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming to perform in a town near you. And come and see me and say hello. And say, I listened to the podcast. And I'll go, oh, good. Well done. That's what'll happen. Or go to gofasterstrike.com/badges. Buy a badge monthly or just one off. Or just buy a DVD or a book from gofasterstrike.com. That would be a lovely thing to do. Otherwise, just keep enjoying these for free. That's why they're here, for nothing, so you can do that. Come down and see one live at the Leicester Square Theatre as well. Wait, if you can. Goodbye.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.